Goliath must fall. And we are starting this series today. I want to welcome everybody who's with us here live and online. We are doing a three-week series based upon this book right here, written by Louis Giglio. And I want to encourage you, I did last week, to go and buy this book. You can get it anywhere and everywhere. You can get an audio version, digital copy. You can Amazon Prime it and start reading through this with us, because I believe that there's so much more than what I can cover in 3 weeks, that it is life-changing, and that every single one of us in this room have Goliath in our life. We have a version of a giant, something that is opposing us, something that is standing in front of us and is keeping us from whatever it is that God has for us. And if you're in here today, then you know God has something for you, and there are enemies that exist in all shapes and sizes, and we call them giants, that get in the way, that try to intimidate us, that steal our hope, that steal our ability to see God's goodness. And we are going to talk about those giants throughout this and what God has to say about those giants. Now, there's all kinds, right? The Goliath of the scriptures that we'll look at is a literal man who opposed the nation of Israel. But it's a story. It's your story. It's my story. Every single one of us, we wake up every day with something that is stopping us, something that is intimidating us, something that is making us shrink back. And God wants us to live a life that is victorious. He actually does. The nation of Israel is just a group of people that represent you and me today. He wanted those people to have freedom. And in the midst of their journey, Goliath showed up. And so in the midst of our journey, we can have these giants. And they're all different shapes and sizes. And the book talks about five of them. In the video that you just watched, it kind of highlights and says, you know, some of these giants are these big, crazy concepts that seem to overwhelm us. And some of us have been in those spaces. Some of us have been in the space of fear, where you just go to sleep at night and you just don't know how you're going to face tomorrow. And you lay there and you're afraid of what could happen, what will happen. Maybe it's something to do with your health. Maybe it's something to do with a relationship. Maybe it's something to do with the stock market. And you just live in this kind of fear that there's something outside of your control, that you feel like you're about to be victimized by something somehow. And that's a giant. That's something that can completely dominate your life. That's something that stands in front of you and says, you are not going to go past this. You are not going to experience anything else but this right here. Be afraid. And some of us just live in little fear, and that fear kind of grabs our ankles and bites us as we walk through the day. Maybe it's the fear of not making a team, or it's the fear of not being accepted. And some of these things are outlined in these other five. The fear of rejection. Some of us are afraid of what people might think of us. I mean, some people are afraid of their Instagram, or I like to call it the Insecuregram. Anybody on Insecuregram? Yeah, a lot of us are. You know that place where you go where you post something and you're just afraid that no one will like it? And it just represents this place of your life. And for some reason, our entire world hangs on the thread of how many people. And if you get to 100 likes, then you suddenly like deserve to treat yourself to ice cream. It's called rejection. It's called the fear of rejection. And it's this thing where if they don't, they must not embrace me. And some of us live with that giant, like right in our face, that I'm not acceptable. And some of us live with addiction, and it can be very real, difficult substance abuse and addiction, certain patterns that you cannot get away from. And of course, in the journey of overcoming some of these types of things, you have to participate. But there is a battlefield of your mind. These giants, they don't necessarily live in the real world the way Goliath did. They live between your ears. They live in your heart. These things exist and they drag you through life. And some of you are sitting in here today and you have this nasty giant of addiction. and you are in here today and you're listening to me talk and you have got to a place where you feel like there's no way out of it. Like there's just no way for you to experience life outside of that addiction. And you're concerned. And today I'm here to tell you that giant is real and God has an answer for that giant in your life. And some of you have maybe addictions like just the way you think or the things you say. You just can't get away from it. Just patterns in your life that are unhealthy. And God has an answer for that addiction. God has an answer for that giant. And maybe it's anger. Maybe you're the kind of person who has this button and there's someone that has like control and they press that button and then you just go off. And when you go off, you leave this trail of brokenness that constantly becomes a stumbling block for you to get to this place in life, this place of success or a journey in a relationship that's supposed to be mended. But every single time that thing or they say that one thing or that person, you know, puts on their brakes too fast, whatever it is, that anger kind of pops up and there's this giant of anger that is literally taking you captive from the inside out. It controls your life. And it ultimately controls where you are supposed to go. And for some of us, it's comfort. It's kind of a more of a sly giant. Something that says, you don't need to work that hard. You don't need to risk it. You don't need to push. Yeah, I know God is telling you to do this thing over here, but doesn't it feel better to stay here? Doesn't it feel better to stay comfortable? I mean, you can look at what God wants you to do, but it's going to cost you a lot. It's going to hurt. It's going to be a risk. You're going to lose these types of things that make you feel successful. And so we sometimes stand with this God of comfort that lives in front of us, and we go, I want to go beyond that, but man, this just feels too good. And all of these things can be giants and little versions of this and medium versions of this and all these in between. And all of us can stand and live a life where we are facing a giant and we are in a place where we have to decide if, in fact, we will ever get past it. Sometimes it's just a circumstance. It's just a moment where the car breaks down or you didn't get the job or you get let go and you're in that day or you're in that hour and you just go, I can't get past this. This is the end. This is the end for me. This right here is the end of my journey as I know it. That's a giant. And God has an answer for that giant. God has a solution for that giant. And what we're going to look at in this series is that giant is just like the giant of the scriptures that you're facing, is just like the giant that David and the nation of Israel faced, and that giant not just will fall, not can fall, not should fall. That giant must fall. It must. And there's a reason. And ultimately, it's because God is in the business of destroying the things in your life and my life that keep us from the freedom that comes from Him, from the life He wants us to live. And if you don't know you have a giant, then you won't know what you need to overcome that giant and live that life that you're supposed to live. In the book, Louis Giglio says it this way: if you're not living the life you're supposed to live, this story is for you. And I want you to just ask yourself right now, is there a giant? Is there a problem? Is there belief between the ears? Is there conviction in your heart today that is standing in the way of you experiencing God's best for your life? We're going to call that a giant. We're going to call that Goliath. And we're going to believe that giant, that Goliath must fall. Now, we're going to be looking at a classic story. It's so classic, it ends up all over pop culture. If you didn't grow up in the church, you have heard of Goliath. You have heard of this giant of a man that a shepherd boy fought. And we're going to be looking at 1 Samuel. This is in the Old Testament, chapter 17. Now, we have for you guys on our app, the 514 Church app, a Bible. And so I want everyone right now to pull out their Bibles, a digital copy of their of the Bible, and go to 1 Samuel. It's on the app. It's the little rectangle with a cross on it, and you can type at the top left, 1 Samuel 17, or go find your own digital copy, or pull out your actual Bible. And if you have a Bible here and you can't see because it's dark in here, then just use your phone and use the light. I don't know if you know this. This is kind of a little life hack. On the iPhone, if you hold down the flashlight button, it gives you three different light settings. Yeah, you can do bright, medium, or lighter. So please use the lower setting so that we're not all annoyed by your bright light. But what we do want is we want everybody to read through this. And so here's what I do when I'm leading through a passage like this. I will make sure that I understand what's happening in 1 Samuel all the way up to 17, and I want to look at what's happening after. And then sometimes I will read 1 Samuel 17 every day and just let it marinate. And what will happen is as you look at this story, and we unpack this together in a series, and you get this book, you commit to go buying this book, God will actually give you something that you didn't have before, and it's an ability to overcome these obstacles, these giants in your life. So if I told you, read this passage in the scriptures, read this book, and then keep reading this and go along this series, you could overcome maybe a giant in your life. Maybe something that is designed to destroy you. But if you do these things, then something between the ears, something between your chest, you will change and you will feel a new motivation, a new truth that will allow you to overcome the greatest obstacles that life has before you. And so in 1 Samuel 17, the quick backstory is you have the army of God. You have the army of God, the Israelites, and the Israelites have tons of success. They have a great history where God made a promise with them, with a man who was no one from nowhere, and then there was miraculous births that kept this nation growing, and then God promised this nation to have great success, and they ended up in slavery for 400 years, and then they were delivered from slavery from this amazing, amazing leader named Moses, who led them through the Red Sea as it parted, and then they ended up for 40 years in a desert, and God provided for them in the desert, and they trusted God in the desert, and they learned to trust him, and they failed, and they had success all throughout the desert, and then eventually they broke through into this promised land that was theirs, and when they got through, the walls of Jericho and this first city went tumbling down miraculously, and then they started to fight all these different tribes and take over the land. And as they started to take over the land, they established their home base, and they were given a king, and the king was Saul. And so we see as the nation of Israel is settling into its territory, and it has its king, that there are still tribes in their land who are standing in the way of them possessing everything that God has given them. And so we arrive in 1 Samuel 17, at the Valley of Elah, where the Philistines are on one side of the valley, and there's a river that flows through the middle of this valley, and then it comes up on the other side, and the Israelites are standing there. And they are there to take over the land, and King Saul is there, and all of the Israelites' army is there, and the greatest champions, the greatest fighters, they're all there. And the Philistines have their army on the other side. And every single day, they line up across from each other with a valley in between. And one day, before they start to fight, this army of God sees some movement in the middle of the Philistines' ranks. And from them, they see this giant of a man start to march down the side of the valley into the middle. And he's not alone. He has three or four guys that are carrying these giant pieces of metal, a part for his body, parts for his legs, his shield, his sword. And all of it together weighs 125 pounds, and the tip of his spear weighs 15 pounds. And this Goliath walks out into the middle of the valley and stands up and looks at the nation of Israel. The nation that belonged to God, whom the Philistines had heard the stories of the parting of the Red Sea and Jericho falling down and God providing them victory after victory when they came into the land. And they said, finally, we're going to put this giant in front of them. Because they have their God, but we have our giant. And so Goliath would go down in the middle, and he had all of his fanfare and all of his weaponry, and he was called a champion because he never lost a battle. And he was the pride of the Philistines. He might have had a couple wounds from battles, but essentially his confidence was overwhelming, and Goliath was 9 feet tall. Even in the valley, the Israelites saw him and they knew how giant he was as he stood next to his armor bearers. 9 feet tall is 2 feet taller than Shaquille O'Neal. He was ripped with muscle like Rich Froning. I mean, this guy was all muscle, big nasty beard, and a booming voice that every single day he would stand in front of the nation of Israel, the people of God, and say, "Your God is nothing to me. I'm not afraid. I will destroy you. I will defy your God. And if you think that that's not the truth, send one person down here to fight me." When he says this, he's like, "I've never lost a battle. Like, I've never lost a hand-to-hand fight." And everyone in Israel knew. Everyone knew. He's never lost. You could just tell. I mean, of course he's never lost. Look at him. He is a giant of a man. There's no way he's lost. He said, "If you send one of your people down, I'll fight. And whoever wins that wins the whole war. Whoever wins the battle between one man, your man and me, will win the whole war. We'll win the land and we'll retreat." I mean, every single day, Goliath went into the valley and said this. His booming voice, this uncouth, nasty champion fighter of a man that says, "Your God is worthless." They knew the history of Israel. The Israelites had forgotten the history of Israel because in some fashion, when Goliath posed his threat, this is what it says the Israelites felt. It says, on hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. You see, the idea of being dismayed is he was caught off guard. He had fighters. He had men that were tried and battle-weathered. But he saw Goliath and he was dismayed. He thought, "I don't have a strategy for this. I don't know what to do. I don't have one man that can fight this." Knowing that he didn't have one man that could fight against Goliath meant that he knew he was going to lose. He was afraid. He was terrified. And it didn't just happen one day. Every single day, Goliath would rise up from his breakfast table and his armor bearers would go back down into the valley, and this 9-foot giant would stand up and remind them with his booming voice, "Your God is nothing, and neither are you." It happened every day, and the scriptures say it happened for 40 days, for 40 days. And I want you to see that you and me often live in the world of hearing every single day our giant taunt us. I mean, how many of us in here have not only heard the giant that we are afraid to fight, have we been literally overwhelmed to the point where there's a comfort with it, where that brokenness like seeps into depression, where you just know like that part of my life. We can live on the side of the valley. We can just be in camp. We can be together. But whatever's behind the Philistines, I will never get there. I'm so used to this giant. I'm so used to its voice. I have so much fear. I have so much rejection. I'm so addicted. I am too comfortable. There's just no way ever. I've heard it enough days to know I'm not ever going to make it past this. That's the way the Israelites felt. Well, I mean, God obviously has messed up. God must have messed up. God must have pulled back on the throttle Because man, he really like did something special for Abraham, and he did something special for Isaac. He did something special for those in captivity in Egypt. He did something special through Moses and through Joshua and Jericho. But now we got Saul, and obviously with Goliath, this must mean the story of the great promised people of God ends right here. And you and me have come to places in our life where we think, this is the end of my story. This is the end of me. I can't overcome this. I have no hope. It's not just the days that just happened. They heard the booming voice, and then every single night they went to bed with the resonating lie that was coming from this giant that just boomed inside their mind and bounced around and told them, you are rejected, you are addicted, you are too comfortable, you are no good, you're nothing, and you will never get past me, and you will never experience the goodness that God has for you. Some people, when they're in this moment, and maybe you've been there, and I have been there. I have been to this place. You know, one of my giants is approval. It's approval. I joke about insecure Graham, but that's kind of like me and most of us, let's be honest. Ironically, Louis Giglio, who wrote the book, he liked my post about us doing this series on Instagram, which reinforced my giant of approval. So I'm a little confused about that. Hey, Louie, like, don't reinforce bad conduct, man. I'm trying to beat the giant of approval. But I have to tell you, somebody likes what I'm doing. Somebody likes what I'm saying. Somebody says you did a good job. Someone visited our church and just this last service and said, I'm proud of you. Oh, that does something in me. And ultimately what it does in me is it's just this falsified idea of my goodness before God. And ultimately my goodness before God is not a good sermon, and it's not a good book, and it's not a good baptism, and it's not kids going to camp. That's not what makes me good before God. There's one thing that makes me good before God, and approval is a giant in my face that won't let me see that my goodness comes from Jesus Christ alone. And so does yours. And so every single one of us, man, I lay awake at night with this giant sometimes. Approval, do they, will they, how they, this. And there's been times where like, I don't even know it's a giant anymore. It just kind of resonates. It's just part of my experience. And I read a book and it tells me and I learn, I try and I shift. But ultimately what happens after 40 days and what happens after 40 nights when the nation of Israel is getting heartsick. You see, in the scriptures they say this about hope. It says, hope deferred makes the heart grow sick. And so maybe you have been to this place in the night with your giant where you're sick, your heart's sick. The relationship, the situation, the deal, you just can't get past it and you're just sick. And the giant's so big and so loud and there's no way around it. You see, the story of the Israelites in 1 Samuel 17 being on this valley is a story of you and me, because you and I stand on the precipice of something wonderful that God has for us. And what God does for the nation of Israel is the same thing he does for you and me. And what he does for the nation of Israel is in the midst of this battle, in the midst of this Goliath, in the midst of this giant, God miraculously sends this shepherd, just a boy, a scruffy, small boy who spends his time in a wonderful little place that means a lot to us one time a year called Bethlehem. And from this little town of Bethlehem, God sends this shepherd boy named David, whom God had anointed and said would eventually one day be the king. But in the meantime, David is a shepherd. He is watching over sheep. And he is sitting there, and his father sends him to go give food to his brothers who work in the army for the Israelites. And when David shows up, David is feeding his brothers, and he hears Goliath in the valley. And when he hears Goliath in the valley, David perks up. In the midst of 40 days of hopelessness, in the midst of 40 nights of terrified, destructive thinking, these men, these infantry, are watching Goliath do their thing again. And David can see in their faces that they don't think there's any way out. And David hears what Goliath says, and he starts to actually get boisterous and go, what in the world is going on? There's a giant down there defying the God of Israel? His brothers get frustrated with them, and you can read it in 1 Samuel 17. Stop being conceited, David. You don't know. We're the army. We've been dealing with this. We're listening. We're putting together a strategy. And David goes, I don't care what it is. I see fear in your faces, and I know that this giant cannot stand against the God of Israel. And then he gets in this exchange with his brothers, and ultimately the shepherd from Bethlehem, he drops something in the middle of the camp that changes the nation of Israel forever, and it's the same thing that will change you forever. This is what happens in the dialogue. When they get mad at him, his brothers, for talking, David says, now what have I done? Said David, can I even speak? Can I even just say, like, I'm not afraid? Like, I see the giant, and I'm certain that God has a plan for this giant? Then he turned to someone else and brought up the same matter. And the men answered him as before. And one of the things they're talking about is who will get rewards and what the rewards will be for the person that defeats the giant. Basically, land, tax-free for the rest of your life, and you get to marry the king's daughter. And David's not even motivated by that. His whole motivation is, I don't need motivated. I know God. God can defeat that giant. It's fascinating. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, the king, and Saul sent for him. And essentially what you need to understand is what he says to Saul is what he said in the midst of the people on the side of the mountain. He reported to Saul and he says, and David said to him, let no one lose heart. 40 days, 40 nights. Terrified, afraid, huge giant. The end of our story, the end of our hope is standing in the valley in between what God has for us and where we are. And David, on one hearing of Goliath's taunt, says to the king, hey, don't lose hope. Don't lose heart. On account of this Philistine, this giant, your servant will go and fight him. When David says your servant, it's this humble description of himself, because what David knows about himself is that God has had him in training. And we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks how David, while he was a shepherd, he fought a lion and he fought a bear and he defeated him. And it's one of the reasons that he had confidence for this giant. But the one that most people never talk about is something that was the real reason why David could speak hope into the people in the midst of their hopelessness, in the midst of the face of their giant. And that is that David was a musician. David was a psalmist. David was a composer. David was a poet. And David spent years sitting under a tree with his sheep, writing songs about the victories of God. When David showed up in the midst of the people's giant, they heard, who is your God? He's nothing. I'll defeat him. And what happened is the voice of the enemy became the song of the people. But David showed up with training, knowing my God is an awesome God. He will be victorious. He lies me down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He brings victory to those who serve him. That was the song in David's head. And when he spoke that, hope started to stir.
And the people started to believe. Maybe we can defeat this giant. They hear a song. They hear a voice. And it cracks open this door into this space that they had forgot about for 40 days and 40 nights. And David speaks, and I will fight him. And the shepherd boy from Bethlehem says, there's a way. And a lot of us read the story of David and Goliath and we think, okay, how do I need to step up? How do I need to step up like David? How can I face my giant? You know, David showed up, okay, he had his five smooth stones, which we'll talk about, and he was a shepherd boy. Maybe I need to humble myself and I need to spend more time being more of a servant and serving sheep. I need to figure out how to have a better attitude. I need to not be conceited like his brothers were. And we think, we look at David and we go, I gotta be more like David. Maybe if I start writing songs, and maybe if I start watching sheep, and maybe if I start to figure out a different way to do tactics and figure out life, I gotta figure out David. I gotta think out David. I gotta be like David. You see, the story of David and Goliath has nothing to do with you being like David. The story of David and Goliath is a picture of Jesus Christ. You see, you're not supposed to be David because in the story, David is Jesus. You see, the only thing that can bring you hope in the midst of 40 days and 40 nights, the only person that can bring you this possibility against the giant of fear, of rejection, of comfort, of addiction, the only thing in the midst of that giant that you hear in the depths of the night, terrified, the only thing that can bring you hope is not a shepherd boy, it's the good shepherd, Jesus Christ. And he shows up humble from Bethlehem with the songs of heaven on his heart because he writes them, he is them, he represents them, and he speaks all your fear, all your pain, all your problems, all your giants, I will defeat them. Goliath must fall. That's the story of David and Goliath. And so when the people hear David's hope, the hope starts to bubble. And what you need today is you need something to start to bubble in your soul where you know maybe with Jesus, there's hope beyond this giant. Maybe there's something wonderful beyond this valley. Maybe there's something beautiful, and maybe Jesus, maybe what he's already done, if I lean into that, if the transcription in my brain turns from hopelessness to Jesus, then maybe what happens between the ears and what happens in my heart could manifest itself in my life so that I could experience victory. Maybe. And here's what you need to know. And here's something that I heard all growing up, but I'm just starting to lean into it in a new way. And that is this, is having Jesus means having hope. It means that when Goliath, and he will, your Goliath, my Goliath, when he shows up in the valley and he taunts you and he speaks lies, that the good shepherd can speak the truth of love and change and life and goodness, and you can always, will always have hope. It's something beautiful to grab onto. You need it, and I need it. The Israelites needed the good shepherd in the New Testament. When Jesus was on earth, he called himself the good shepherd. It's such a wonderful throwback because David was a shepherd and then Jesus is the good shepherd. And when he shows up in the midst of the fight and he says, I'm the good shepherd, and the thief, he comes to steal and kill and destroy. Who does that sound like? That sounds like Goliath. Goliath comes to steal and to kill and destroy. But Jesus came that you would have life and have it abundant. That means he blows down the giant and takes you on a freeway to life and goodness. The good shepherd does that. Jesus is the good shepherd. What we need is a string. We need something to grab onto. We need something that bubbles our soul, something we can grab onto that says, no matter what, there's hope. Biblical hope is life-changing certainty about the future. It's in between your ears. It's in your heart. It's a certainty God has done, so he will do. Being certain about the future in a way that affects how you live right now. Paul, one of the authors of the New Testament, who was the promoter of the Good Shepherd, he's one of the reasons we're here today. He started the church after Jesus left. He went and did it. He went and told everybody about the resurrection, and people believed in Jesus. And after he told everybody, he got persecuted and was left for dead. And in the midst of his giant, he says this to the Corinthians. He says, he, Jesus, the Good Shepherd, has delivered us from such a deadly peril. He's talking actual death. And he will deliver us. On him we have set our, say it, hope that he will continue to deliver us. Jesus will continue to deliver you. What Jesus did on the cross, what he spoke in the face of the greatest giant of all, is victory for you and me in every way along the way. It's not just Goliath can fall. It's not he might fall. It's he must fall. Because Jesus is God and he's the Good Shepherd. That moment turned everything on its hinge for the Israelites. I want you to come back the next couple weeks so we can continue to look at what God does to the giant for the Israelites and what he does to the giant in every one of our lives. Let's take a minute and let's pray. Having hope and having Jesus means having hope. So some of you in here, you don't have Jesus. And I know you might think like, hey, I want hope. Like I want something to happen. I want there to be a solution. I want to get an email. I want to get someone to pray. I want something to change. I want to be healed. I want, you have to understand, every single giant is overcome by one thing, and that is the power of Jesus Christ. And so if you don't have him in your life, then you are forfeiting victory over whatever giant you face. And so I want you to right now, if you have never embraced Jesus Christ as your God whom you worship, say this to me, say this to him in your heart. Just repeat after me. Just say, Jesus, man, I have real giants. Giants of fear and rejection and addiction. I have them, God. You know what they are. I'm losing the battle. But Jesus, you won the battle. And so you're the good shepherd, and I want to place my faith in you, not in me, in you. So right now, I ask you to forgive me of my sins. Wipe them away. Be my Savior. Be my good shepherd. Help me to believe in you for my eternal soul and my destination and for my earthly life and every day that I live. Father, thank you for defeating the greatest giant of all, and help me to defeat all the rest with you. In Jesus' name, amen.